Hi there. Welcome to Service Notes. I'm your host, Reena Brambat. And if you have ever wondered what really happens behind the scenes in IT service management, well, you're in the right place. We're talking tech, transformation, and the occasional, oh no, the system is down moments. Expect real experts and maybe a little fun along the way. Whether you're deep into IT service management or just curious, grab a coffee or water will do. And let's dive in. Hit that play button. Let's do this. Welcome back to another episode of Service Notes, the podcast where we dive deep into journeys of service management professionals from their first ticket into leading transformations. I'm Reena, and I'm truly excited to introduce a guest whose story is a masterclass in growth, greed, and power of service-minded leadership. Joining me today is Karen Brush, an accomplished service management leader who currently serves as head of service management at her organization. What makes her journey truly inspiring is how it all started in a junior role as a service level manager. She navigated the complexities of starting out as service level manager into, you know, performing various service management roles and managing customers' expectations. In these interviews, we will hear how Karen built her career, the key moments that shaped her leadership style, and how she raised the bar for service management teams. Karen, welcome to Service Notes, and we are so thrilled to have you here.
Yeah, I have one more question for you. So given you said you're not, you didn't study technology as such, if you have to pick like your favorite go-to, easy to use tool for IT service management, which one would it be?
Oh, golly. I don't think any of them are easy to use. If I'm being honest, have their complexities. To be fair, necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. IT services are complicated things, so the tools that we use tend to be complicated. Which have I found easiest to use? I've used 3 or 4 different service management tools. I think they all have their good parts and bad parts. I'm quite intrigued with what Atlassian are doing in that space. I know that they've, I've used during Confluence a number of the organizations I work for. I don't really see it as a proper service management tool. I know some organizations do use it as that.
Right.
But its ease of use, I find it's much easier for understanding what's the next task.
Okay.
Right. So in most service management tools, you'll have a change, let's say, set up, and all of the tasks have to be subtasked for that change.
Right.
So it's done in the same way, within Jira, you'd have your Epic and all of your user stories.
Right.
Exactly the same idea. The difference is and you can put workflow with both of them. You know, mm-hmm. You can say when you've done that, then it automatically goes to that one. And,
mm-hmm.
That's the same. I think the visualization is better in Jira than the traditional service management tools. So I think, if I was going to advocate for what needs to improve in service management tooling, it would be visualization.
Mm-hmm. Visualization. Okay.
You have to be in the know to know what to do, pretty much with all the tooling that's out there.
Right.
And I know everybody needs training for any tool, but there's something about service management tools that means a change analyst wouldn't know what to do with incident.
Right. Right.
And that's ridiculous because it's the same tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they might know the process, but how the process works in the tool.
Yeah.
That's a different thing. Yeah. And you can go from one company to the next using the same tool and they'll use it slightly differently for the same process.
Yeah.
So there's a massive complexity in service management tooling that we could make our lives easier for ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. That is a fair point. Obviously, you've achieved, I like to think, like great, great heights of your career, managing kids, being a female in a technology space, especially when you started out, probably there weren't that many female in the room. Like, what advice would you give to your peer group who might be trying to balance, family responsibilities and still trying to get ahead in their career?
Yeah, well, there's probably several things in there. I think, in fact, on International Women's Day this year, I did a talk about being your authentic self. So for me, this is key, is don't try to be somebody you're not. Now, okay, there's times when you might have to play a role. That's slightly different if you make a conscious decision to be, you know, a little bit, you're the person who checks and balances. That's different to rocking up and pretending to be a person you're not.
Right. Know?
So there's a tendency for, particularly for women coming into IT, to be the man, you know, to behave like the other men in the room, even maybe even to dress like them, to mimic that expectation because that's the way it's been. And actually, that's stressful, right? If you're trying to, if you're masking, which is what it is, if you're masking all the time, that's an additional stress on top of your day job and all of your activities outside of work. So, and I know it's harder when you're younger because you worry about what everybody thinks about you.
Yeah.
And the advantage being of a certain age is actually you stop giving a monkey's what people think about you. So there's definitely an advantage of being older. But it's, don't be scared to be authentic, you know, when you're younger. In terms of the work-life balance, it is a bit of an art. I think for me, one of the things is make sure that you have some me time, which sounds very cliche, but for me, it's playing music and martial arts. You know, that's my time when I can release the stress. I enjoy it. I also enjoy cooking. So if I'm baking on a Saturday, the family, right, mum is stressed, she's baking, right? Okay, fine. But also make time, decide what are your red lines. You know, so for me, when I left the outsourcing organization, it's because I was leaving home at 7 before the kids were mostly up. Mm-hmm. And I was getting home at 6 with time to bath them, well, feed them, bath them, get into bed, feed myself. And then I'd work again for another couple of hours. And it's like, actually, that's not sustainable.
Right.
And it means that the only quality time I'm getting with them is feeding them and bath time. You know, I'm not really getting any play time with them. So work out what it is that you want with your family. And it might not be with kids. It might be you might have caring responsibilities. So, and again, I guess with caring responsibilities, don't be afraid to talk about that in the workplace.
Yeah.
Because you have rights as a carer to working adjustments that, you know, that allow you to have some flexibility. And I think, you know, when you're young and starting out, you worry about the impression that might give if, you know, you have to occasionally take time off to take somebody to the hospital or you have an emergency call, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But this is your life, right? This goes back to be authentic.
Yep.
Don't apologize for your responsibilities because, again, it's just more stress.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's so, so important because, and sorry to interject, but like I look at myself and I take myself back in, you know, 2005, 2006, when I was just starting out and I have a daughter who has autism, severe autism. Yeah. She cannot speak. I would not dare to say that to anyone.
Mm.
I just would not share that information whatsoever. Yeah. And I'll kind of juggle the, you know, role of a mother and doctor appointments, all that, just taking time off. And I don't know, something happened, I guess, as I got more senior in organization, something clicked and I was like, yeah, no, I think, and like that probably was the first thing I told people now. And I tell them now to say, that's my situation. So yeah, I don't know what happens, but I think you're right. Like, I feel like had I done that in the beginning, perhaps I would have avoided a lot of stress and, you know, confusion at times because, not long ago, my daughter got epilepsy. So, you know, seizure just out of control. And I would be on a conference call. I work from home and I would disappear because she's having a seizure. And I wouldn't tell that to the team. I was just like, sorry, my computer broke. My computer froze. My need to restart. And then I realized, like, I think at some point they're going to wonder. So I just kind of reached out to my manager and I had one-to-one and he said, you know, totally fine. I think you should just email everyone and let them know what's happening rather than making up these excuses. So I think right. And that is such a profound advice and that people should, you know, follow whether you're a man or a woman, doesn't matter. You know, no, that's not applicable. Yeah.
And it's the last couple of companies I've worked for, they've actually had a network of people who have some kind of connectivity with neurodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a safe space to actually really talk about what you're going through. And you've got that supporting community as well. So, you know, search out, you know, whether there is anything going on in your organizations that would give you that little bit of a vent. Because I know I deal with people in the workplace who have massive challenges with their autistic children, where it's not just about nonverbal, it's the violence, probably mm-hmm. largely down to their frustration. And yet they've got to turn up and do a day job, you know,
yeah.
And it helps give them that support network, knowing that there's other people out there who are going through similar, you know, it's never the same, is it? The experience is never the same. And I'm a huge advocate for being open about neurodiversity in the workplace. In fact, at the IT Service Management Forum conference in 2023, we actually did the start of the second morning was mm-hmm. an interview with somebody who'd actually never said that they had neurodiversity as an issue in their life for them personally.
Right.
And I was interviewing them, and it lasted about 50 minutes, and we were like, okay, look, you know, we're not really sure what impact this is going to have. It was unbelievable, the reaction we had. People who were in the audience saying, that's me.
Yeah.
We had one who said, my husband was diagnosed with ADHD yesterday and my world fell apart, and thank you so much for, you know, and it's just, if you're, you know, if somebody, at least somebody, is open about it, it just enables other people to vent that stress.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a very good point.
That brings us to end of this part of our conversation. If you enjoyed this discussion, please feel free to join us next time as I continue discussing with Karen her career journey, her leadership style, her insight into service management. Please make sure you hit the subscribe button whenever you get podcast. And if you've really enjoyed this episode, feel free to share with your peers, colleagues, networks, and friends. Thank you for tuning in to Service Notes. I'm Reena, and I will see you in the next one.
This episode of Service Notes is sponsored by 24 Trainings. Check out their service management training classes at www.24trainings.com.